This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Jordan Goodman back. He's been on the show before, and he's known as America's Money Answers Man. Jordan, what do you think of this new rate hike? The Fed has done what they said. They raised rates. What does it mean?
Well, it means that people are going to pay more for loans, but not earn more for their deposits. So the banks are going to get rich on this, and they're happy. The bank stocks are up. But for consumers, there's not much winning here at all. Nobody seems to look at it that way.
Now, why wouldn't a higher rate environment translate into higher rates on savings? I mean, the Federal Reserve and the broader system, it's hard to call it just the Federal Reserve because it's the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, the governments, central banking cartel in general. They've been screwing savers for many years now with these low rates. And the people it punishes most are the people that did the right thing, usually older people, people that delayed gratification, that saved money. Right. They did the right thing. And the system has just abandoned them.
Correct.
Why wouldn't we see higher rates on savings?
Because the banks can get away with it. Banks rely on inertia. And there's something like $10 trillion with a T, $10 trillion sitting in savings accounts, money market funds, CDs, just earning almost nothing these days. And they can get away with it, basically. There's just not much competition. People who have money in those kind of instruments are so either inert or scared that they're willing to get no return in order not to lose their principal. I just talked to one today, Jason. Guy lost a lot of money in 2008. He does not trust the stock market. He thinks if he got in now, it'd be right before it'd plunge again. And he's got all his money in CDs earning like 0.01%. I said, he doesn't trust anybody in bonds. Okay, maybe get 2.5%, but you're going to lose a lot of principal as interest rates on long treasuries keep rising. So that's not a particularly good offer either. So banks can get away with it. They will.
Okay, but why wouldn't banks have been able to get away with that before? I mean, historically, I remember when I was a kid and, you know, rates were exorbitantly high. My mom used to talk about how she was earning these huge sums of interest in money market accounts.
Inflation was much higher then.
Sure.
I mean, in the early 80s, inflation was 14%. And you could get 14-15% on a money market fund. That was a great idea. That is not coming back anytime soon, Jason, because the banks are trying to raise their capital levels all the time. And this is what's happening. They raised the rates immediately. The prime rate went from 3.75 up to 4%. And I think it's going to go up at least two, if not three times more this year, which would mean it'd be up to 4.5%. So the bank stocks, and the banks, who do they work for? Their shareholders, ultimately. Bank stocks have been soaring since the election, on the anticipation of the Fed not only doing this rate increase, but several more to go, which just fattens their net interest margins.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's interesting. I'm just wondering, though, I mean, you know, just because inflation was higher in the past, and, you know, we talked about this before when we talked about the Trump administration and so forth, how I believe we both think there will be, I mean, there already has been, more inflationary pressures in the economy under a Trump administration. And,
yes,
you know, of course, philosophically, I hate inflation, but as a real estate investor, I love inflation. So,
right.
You know, I'm just being self-interested like any good capitalist would be.
It's but, good. Yeah, no, you're right. And we've had not much inflation for the last few years.
Yeah.
In fact, many economies around the world have deflation. Yeah. If you're in Japan, large parts of Europe, prices are falling. There's too much supply and not enough demand.
Yeah.
So central banks have been trying to create some inflation, and now we're starting to get that here.
Right. You know, I still don't get the rate disconnection. I mean, it seems like if rates are going to be higher on borrowing, they ultimately have to be higher on savings. You know, how can that not be passed through? I mean, look at if we, you know, the banking system is hardly a free market system, but it's got some elements of free market stuff in it. And if banks are earning more money and have more to pay for interest to savers and they want to increase their deposit accounts, wouldn't the free market just naturally make them compete for those deposits by offering higher rates? Why would that be different this time? No.
Okay, several things. First of all, there's been tremendous consolidation in the banking industry.
And that is anti-competitive. So I got you there.
Totally anti-competitive. Yeah. I agree with you. But I'm saying since 2008, you know, talk about too big to fail. Well, the too big to fail have gotten a lot bigger, okay? All of them, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, every one of them has taken over other major banks. So there's just a lot less competition than there was before. And I agree with you completely. Mm-hmm. It's anti-competitive. But that's one reason why they don't feel do that. What do the banks do? They raise dividends. They raise executive salaries. They buy back stock. They do things for their stockholders, not their depositors, because the depositors are not complaining. The shareholders are complaining. So that's the ones that they spread this. So their profits are going up because, again, they're charging more and not paying more, and they're raising dividends and all those kind of things. So that's where the money is going. Also, the banks have loads of money. They don't need extra deposits. They've got more money than they're not lending out. They're lending it to the Fed.
Right. And by the way, that is such a good point. That was one of the totally frustrating things. I mean, these frickin' crooked banksters. They're just criminals by any good judgment sense of the word, right? That's exactly what they did. You know, they got these huge bailouts, and then that money that should have trickled down really barely trickled.
Correct.
You know, they just kept it. They bought treasuries. They didn't loan it. They didn't help small business. They didn't help the real estate market for many years now.
And it's still that way. Yeah, it's still, as you're in the real estate market, it's still very difficult for people to get real estate loans.
I know. It is getting easier, though. There are several signs, but is it as easy as it should be, given the environment the banksters have taken advantage of? And I say no also, but go ahead with your comment.
What should have happened in 2008, when they had those big bailouts, remember, they brought all the banks in with Hank Paulson and said, each of you is going to take $25 billion and then come under the supervision of the Treasury and the Fed and all that. And some of them said, no, we don't want to take it. No, you are not leaving this room until you take $25 billion. But what they should have done, which they didn't, is say, in return for this bailout, you are going to have to do lending. And they're going to have some kind of strict way to make sure that the money goes out to both individuals and small businesses in a prudent way, but they never put any kind of restriction on that or any kind of...
Of course not. Our politicians don't represent us. They represent the big corporate interests and the lobbyists, of course.
Well, here, Hank Paulson, who is the head of Goldman Sachs, is making the deal, right? His buddies at Goldman Sachs and other places, that's when they had the leverage because the banks really needed to bail. Not all of them, but a lot of them did. And they should have said, you get this in return for this, and they just got it and never. So they sat on the money, put it, as you say, in the Federal Reserve, and made it really. And remember, at the time, they were cutting back people's credit lines dramatically. You'd have a $10,000 credit line, and the next morning you wake up and it's $4,000 or something. And they were cutting back credit lines to perfectly creditworthy people, making it almost impossible for real estate investors to get loans. So yeah, they'll lend to Exxon and AT&T, you know, AAA companies. But the average person or small business person, they got shut out. And that's a little bit looser, but not much looser right now, frankly.
One way to fight back in a small way, but look, I got a lot of people listening, right? I've got a big audience, and I'm going to tell you, audience, one way to fight these criminals, these banksters, is to get your money out of the big banks, okay?
Right.
Because this environment has become so anti-competitive, and if you bank at a big bank like Wells Fargo, the disgusting criminals at Wells Fargo who ripped people off massively in their last scandal and, you know, still, of course, paid themselves giant gobs of money after ripping people off with this fake account scandal. Just epic scumbags. And the fees they charge are just enormous. I just gave Wells Fargo the finger and left them after 19 years. I'm really glad. They're a disgusting, pathetic company, in my opinion. And then, you know, B of A, of course, they were the most hated company in America a few years ago. I think they've reformed their reputation to some extent. You know, now Wells is the poster child for bad behavior.
But yeah, B of A took over Countrywide, which was probably the most abusive lender out there. Yeah, they've all got something to say against them.
No question. And then, of course, there's J.P. Morgan Chase, those scumbag bankster criminals with the robo-signing scandal years ago.
Right.
Not too many years ago. They're all just a bunch of criminals, okay? And I don't mean criminal by the definition of can you convict them and put them in jail because you know you can't. But criminal by any normal, reasonable standard, not necessarily the legal standard, which is not the appropriate standard to judge whether someone's a criminal or not, because when these companies get all the laws written in their favor, they suddenly become innocent, even though by any moral judgment, you would say they're a bunch of criminals, right?
That's and they're what about I mean. To change yeah. that dramatically to make it easier for them yeah. to get away with this. So, for example,
yeah. Hang on one sec. I just want to finish my point here, Jordan, because I'm on a rant. Okay. You got to let me rant for a second.
Go for it.
You know, so take your money out of these big, disgusting banks and bank at the smaller banks or credit unions. Credit unions are great. You know, Consumer Reports last year did a great story on rating the big banks and the credit unions and all this stuff. And I tell you, you are being charged. I couldn't believe it when I realized what Wells Fargo was charging me. Basically, you know, I had a whole bunch of accounts with them, and some of my accounts had smaller balances, some had huge balances, okay, at least by my little standards. And, you know, those little accounts, they were just raping them. I mean, they were, yeah. you know, $40 a month charge, and my poor little housekeeper, right, is paying these exorbitant fees, and I'm telling her, I said, Griselda, in 2 years, basically, on any of your accounts, Wells Fargo will just basically deplete the account with fees.
Exactly.
It's disgusting. In 2 years, you will have no money.
Right.
It's unbelievable the way they're just ripping people off. So check out the credit unions. They are a great deal. Clark Howard will back me up on this. I talked with him at FinCon last year. And the small banks that actually aren't, you know, they're part of the Federal Reserve System, of course. They're FDIC insured. But they're not really in the club with the disgusting criminals. So that's what I'd recommend.
You know, credit unions are owned by members, shareholders.
Yeah. But I'm talking about the small banks, you know. Yeah.
The small banks, too. But credit unions have lower fees.
Or no fees.
Pay a little bit more on deposits.
Yep.
And charge a little bit less on loans because they're a nonprofit. They're designed for their members. It's kind of like a co-op.
Yep,
so
it's absolutely.
A different animal. That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, go ahead with your point. My rant is finished.
I was just saying it's about to get worse if that makes you any feel any better.
Tell us about that.
So financial deregulation is going to happen. So a lot of the Dodd-Frank is going to be rolled back in various ways.
And that's good, I think. I mean, that's great for real estate investors. Yeah.
Some of it is good. If they can make lending easier, that would be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's about to happen is the so-called fiduciary rule, which has been going through the Department of Labor, which was supposed to go
into effect. We've been back and forth on that one a few times, yeah.
Yeah, it was supposed to go into effect in April, has now been delayed till July, and will either be wiped out altogether or watered down significantly. And the idea of the fiduciary rule is a financial advisor has to put their client's interests in front of their own. And there has been massive
pushback,
resistance to that from
course,
the financial
of
business.
You know, most people listening probably thought that was the case already. You know, you would just think that naturally, if you go to a financial advisor, and all these banks have gotten into that business, you know, Glass-Steagall, I mean, that's all another discussion. But you go to a financial advisor, you would expect, if you're giving them your money and your trust, they would have your best interest in heart. But nothing could be further from the truth.
So there's two different standards.
Yeah.
This current standard, it's what's called suitability, mm-hmm. meaning is the investment suitable for you?
Right.
Not is there a fiduciary?
And there's a lot of latitude in suitability.
That's right. Now, there are fiduciaries. For example, what are called RIAs, Registered Investment Advisors, do have a fiduciary duty. And they're supposed to, you know, look out for you instead of them. But this was supposed to extend to all kinds of other people in the insurance business and stockbrokers and so on. And there was resistance was massive. And Obama was going to push it through. And it was just about to go into effect in April. And they're lobbying like crazy to either kill it completely or water it down. So that's just another example why things are being stacked in favor of the financial institutions and not the poor individual investor or bank depositor.
All right. So look, enough complaining. I mean, you know, I went on my rant. Jordan, give us some strategies. I mean, one strategy is look, and I get that it's a long-term strategy, but look, we've got a lot of people listening. You need to boycott the big banks. That is the first thing you've got to do. I realize changing banks can be a hassle, but you got to do it. I mean, get your money out of these big, rotten, disgusting banks. They are taking advantage of you. The bigger you make them by giving them your business, the more abusive they become. Because, as I think it was Voltaire.
On the regulatory front, also other check for the consumer.
Hang on, Jordan. Let me finish my Voltaire quote. I think it was Voltaire that said, you know, maybe it's not Voltaire. Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So don't support big monopolies. Go ahead, Jordan.
I was just saying the other check on the banks has been the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Right, which is riddled with its own set of problems, but go ahead.
But it's also under tremendous attack as well.
Yep.
Potentially could be closed down or certainly weakened dramatically. So all the checks on behalf of consumers are being either wiped away or watered down dramatically.
Yeah.
Let me tell you one way, and I agree with you completely, to get your money out of the bank and earn something for yourself instead of keeping it in a CD, savings account, money market fund, earning zero, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Something I think is quite safe. I've got my own money in it, which is what's called a commercial real estate income fund. And there's a website for that, commercialrealestateincomefunds.com.
Yeah, you talked about this. This is your own fund, right?
It is.
And so you're promoting your own fund. And
I am. It's been very popular.
Yeah, my skepticism with that is, number one, you know, the whole fund thing, you know, you had three major problems, commandment number three, et cetera. And we've debated that already, mm-hmm. I believe. But the other thing is, you know, what kind of commercial real estate are you investing in? I've just never,
I'll explain.
You know, thought that you could get returns on commercial like you can on the residential side. But tell us more.
So here are some kinds of projects they do. Student housing, I mean, like people renting houses in college towns.
Yep.
That's one thing they do a lot of.
Conceptually, I think that's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Assisted living, they mm-hmm. do a lot of that.
Yeah.
So there's a big demand for people who can't work them their own, and they've got to be in a house with a nurse's station, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we get it.
They get paid by Medicare, Medicaid insurance, that kind of thing. In many cases, apartment buildings, not even rental, but just regular ones that are being converted or upgraded in various ways. Sometimes shopping centers. It's just a bunch of different. Another one is medical. They do a lot of medical where doctor's offices
medical
adding
office,
equipment.
Yeah, got it.
Medical offices.
Okay, you know, so Jordan,
like
let me ask you this. So what is your position with this fund that you're promoting? Is it? Or, I mean, you're not going out finding the deals and buying them yourself, right?
No, I don't do that. No, there are people
Are you
do
like
that.
An affiliate or what's your deal?
No, I'm actually on the board of it. I'm proud to be on the board of it, and I tell people about it, and I've got my own money in it, and I think it's a good thing. Now, the people who do the real estate decisions have been doing this for 35 years,
mm-hmm.
and they've got a whole network of builder developers that they've dealt with for many, many years, who they give them good deals in return for which the fund gets a piece of the profits. That's what's so unusual about it.
Yeah.
So you get an 8% yield, plus whenever a project is sold, they share the profits when the building is sold, back with the fund, and that's distributed to the shareholders. You get 8% plus whatever it is, 1% or 2% in profit sharing on a quarterly basis whenever there's a property within the portfolio that's sold.
All right, so that's your own thing, and you know, just in full disclosure, you're promoting that. That's
correct.
Your thing.
Correct.
Okay, so any other defensive strategies you want to share with people? You know, get your money out of the big banks, invest in Jordan's fund. Well, that's what Jordan says, but...
yep, that's okay.
That's not what I say, but go ahead. What else?
I'll give you another one, oil and gas.
Tell us about that.
Do it right. If you do it right, you can do very well in oil and gas.
In which way, though? I have looked at that intensely. And mm-hmm. there, first of all, that industry, like probably every industry, but that one just seems more riddled with scams than most of the other industries. So there's a lot of questions. Is that a master limited partnership? Is it exploration? Is it existing wells? You know, what's the deal? I know there are a lot of tax incentives, but tell us more.
You want proven reserves
mm-hmm.
where they're not exploring, where they're pumping out the oil and they know there's going to be years of oil to go. And I'll tell you what I'm involved in. I've invested myself. Their cost of oil is $18 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
$18 a barrel. So oil's
so
now...
as long as it's above that, it's worthwhile to get it out.
Yeah,
what you're
oil's
saying.
Now 50, whatever it may be. And there's two ways to do it. There's a debt way where you get 8.5%.
Basically loaning to the company, basically
correct.
A bond, right?
Correct. It's like a bond, correct, backed by the oil that's coming out of the ground.
Are there any tax incentives on the bond?
Not on the debt side. The debt is just pure income, 8.5% pure income.
Then there's
and then they've got an equity side.
Okay.
There's another side, which does have the tax breaks, and you get... depending on the price of oil, it could be 25, 30%, something like that. That's more volatile because of the price of oil. But then because they're funding the exploration and the development of all this, you get what's called oil depletion allowances and depreciation. There's a whole bunch of tax benefits where you get 25 to 30% in effect tax-free. Now, you got to be, you know, accredited investor. You got to be a kind of a decent size investor to do that. Minimum investment's like $25,000. But there's a way of getting 25 to 30% in effect tax-free. As long as oil stays above $18 a barrel, I think it's going to, you're going to do just fine. So I'm trying to do things that are different than the stock market and the bond market that have, you know, really good income potential. These are all passive income vehicles.
Yeah. First of all, I just want to ask you about oil and gas prices under a Trump administration. I mean, Trump is basically of the drill, drill, drill mindset, Keystone Pipeline. He's all for it, which, by the way, I am too, and I could never understand why the liberal left was against the Keystone Pipeline. I mean, that just seems stupid. You know, it's better. A pipeline is much better for the environment than a bunch of trucks and trains, okay?
The reason they were against it is they didn't want to do anything to encourage oil coming from Canada because it's the tar sands and it's polluting. I mean, it's going to happen anyway, you say. It's going to be trucks and trains.
But the tar sands are really out of business for a while with the oil prices anyway, right?
Yeah. Generally, they want to discourage exploration for oil and gas in Canada. That's where the environmentalists, well, they lost, okay, because these pipelines are going to be drilled and going to be created. So, yeah, I think that's a much safer way of doing it. I agree with you completely.
All right. And so oil prices higher or lower under Trump?
Overall, I would say lower.
Yeah, me too. I agree.
Because I think we're going to have more production.
Yeah, we're going to have production. A lot more production. Yeah.
I mean, he's really, as you say, drill, drill, drill in all kinds of ways. Removing environmental regulations, probably increasing tax benefits in various ways.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
If we can become truly energy independent, we're along that way. We're not all the way there. That would be a fantastic thing for the American economy, not to be reliant on Iran, Iraq, Venezuela, Nigeria, all these places that hate us to get our oil. So we have the oil with fracking and with shale. Yeah. We can do it today.
I am becoming more convinced that we should be concerned about the fracking earthquake issue, though.
Yeah. Well, like in Oklahoma, they've had a huge number of earthquakes because of that. It does unsettle the sands and so on. I agree. And they're pumping all this water back in there. So I agree. But it's still going to happen is what it's coming down to. So I think in the long run, I don't think oil is going to go up more than $60 a barrel. It's probably going to be in the 40 to 50 range for quite a while.
Yeah. Talk to us more about what to expect under the Trump administration. You're one of the three or four people in New York City that is a Trump fan. So you obviously have no local friends.
I can't tell anybody about it because I'm going to get in real trouble. Yes.
Yeah. If they hear this show, they will unfriend you immediately. All those tolerant leftists.
What you want to do is to encourage business to do its thing and be, you know, let business be business here. And all these regulations, I mean, I think some of them are okay. And we talked about consumer regulations, but a lot of these other ones have been excessive. We talked about Dodd-Frank a little bit. I think loosening things up so people can get loans is a good thing for the economy. In the mortgage area, loosening up oil and gas, I think it's going to mean more production, more jobs here. So I don't want to go to an extreme, but I think we need to have fewer regulations in various ways to get the economy moving more. So that part I like. I like the tax cut idea, putting more money in both consumers' pockets and businesses' pockets, because there's only good things they can do with it, Jason. They can spend it, they can invest it, they can grow. Companies get more money and they can raise dividends, buy back stock, acquire other companies, do research and development, get more money into the private sector, and it's always much more efficient than in the public sector. So I think those are all good. I am concerned about the health care, I must say, because the structure that they're talking about now, you can't lose 24 million people and have them lose their health insurance and that be politically viable. That's not going to happen. People have received an entitlement now under Obamacare, and people don't like to give up their entitlements easily. There'll be pitchforks in front of the White House if that happens. So that's going to be very difficult politically to get it through the way they're talking about it right now.
Any other predictions for the economy? I'm pretty bullish under a Trump administration about real estate. By the way, I just want to again make the point that I'm not bullish about these overpriced bubble markets.
Yes.
The expensive northeastern markets, the West Coast, South Florida, these markets are in very scary bubble territory. Yep. Certainly they could still go on for another couple of years, but ultimately the fundamentals are way out of whack and you better be careful. But the nice linear markets we like, whether they be Atlanta, Memphis, Indianapolis, some of the Alabama markets we're in, those are great. I still love them. The yield is fantastic. Even if values soften, which I don't think they will, I think they're going to go up and continue with the loosening.
And one
of
thing that will help those a lot, Jason, is the infrastructure program. Because if we spend $500 billion to a trillion on infrastructure, that uses resources, and that's really good for the Midwest, kind of the industrial part of the economy, which will help real estate markets there. So that's a kind of indirect way on playing infrastructure coming back, because we need cement and asphalt and Caterpillar tractors and all the things they make in the kind of heartland of the Rust Belt. They used to call it the Rust Belt. So that's all very positive for real estate. Everything we've talked about here as well, tax cuts, less regulation, repatriating all these trillions of dollars from overseas, all of that is very positive for real estate as well. Real estate basically is a reflection of what's happening in a local economy with jobs. As people move in, as companies hire, that helps real estate. As people move out and they lose jobs, that's going to hurt real estate. Yeah. So everything Trump's talking about is increasing jobs, and therefore will help real estate values go up.
Did a great show a couple of years ago. I've got to get her back on the show. Actually, I got to get both of them back. I had Consuelo Mack on the show. I had Meredith Whitney on the show. And both of them alluded to the same concept, but Consuelo Mack actually said it. She called the Midwest her favorite emerging market. You know, usually that's applied to countries overseas, right?
That's right. I mean, they've had a really rough time. And I mean, this is where Trump did so well. This is why he won Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and all these places, Ohio, because they've really been hurt by all these factories moving overseas, and the real estate values are not too great in a lot of those places.
Yeah, all the Democratic governors and mayors and presidents they had sold them all down the river. And that's why it's just the Democrat Party is just it's a mess.
They didn't see it coming. Didn't see it coming. But I'm just saying, if you can get those moving again, and get some of these factories. We've already had some announcements. Ford's going to build a factory in Michigan instead of Mexico. And there's been several announcements. That's going to help those markets, not only directly, but indirectly. Economists call it the multiplier effect.
Yep.
And when you get a factory, it's people buy things at the local stores, and it just helps the entire economy move. And the suppliers that aren't even in that local area. And I think a lot of that's in the Midwest. So I think your strategy is right in investing in kind of more modest real estate that has kind of gentle appreciation instead of the super hot markets like a San Francisco or Miami that can get very, very overheated. And we're getting to that kind of speculative bubble stage now. A lot of people are flipping and doing all kinds of crazy things. Yeah. That usually doesn't end well.
It's just funny with human psychology, Jordan. When you're in it, it's so hard to see it. It's so hard to see when everybody's being so positive and everybody's telling you this, this, and that, and you're hearing all these stories about people making fortunes. It's so hard to keep perspective that is going to change. And everybody is always saying, this time it's different, this time it's different. And it's rarely different.
Well, we saw the movie, right, about all these. My favorite scene in that was the stripper, remember, who had the five rental units that she was flipping, all that, right? What's it called? The big, you know what I mean? The movie about real estate. The Big Short,
Michael Lewis's book,
sure. When you look back how crazy it was, at the time it looked perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But if you look back on it, it was just totally crazy, the kind of flipping and the people getting mortgages that shouldn't be getting mortgages. And
you just got to keep track of the fundamentals, folks. If you just buy properties that rent for somewhere in the neighborhood of 1% of the value per month, you're going to be okay.
Right.
You know, and don't buy really trashy C and D class properties if you can all help it, because those things, even though the numbers look great, they rarely do anywhere near as well as they look on paper. So that's the one exception to that rent to value ratio. But
So you've definitely got the right strategy there.
Yeah.
You do.
Jordan, give out your website.
Sure. So moneyanswers.com is my website. Got a lot of emails from you folks last time. Glad to help them. There's all kinds of resources and links there. So I really love to help people in all these different areas, not only investing their money, but mortgages and credit cards, all kinds of things. So moneyanswers.com.
Well, thanks so much. Appreciate you joining us again.
Thanks so much, Jason.
Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check out HartmanMedia.com for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice, or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.